Hi everyone, welcome back to another episode of the Who We Are podcast. There are some people we think we know because we have seen them for years on screen, in headlines, in roles that made us feel something. But behind every polished image is a person navigating life with the same questions, the same heartbreaks, and the same quiet hopes. Today, I have the honor of sitting down with the woman behind one of Singapore's most recognizable names, Rebecca Lim. She's an actress, yes, a household name for sure, a talent we've all grown up watching and loving. But more than that, she's also someone who has endured. She's stayed the course through trends, scrutiny, reinvention, and the evolving pressure of always being seen. She's also walked through seasons of love, loss, friendship breakups, and personal unraveling, and emerged stronger, softer, and more certain of who she is. So this isn't just an interview, it's Rebecca, not as you've seen her, but as you've never heard her before. So welcome back!
Hi Rachel. Hi everyone.
Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
How are you feeling?
A little nervous, but also excited.
Yes. Thank you so much for coming in. And, you know, before we start, maybe I thought, you know, we can start with some, maybe a little bit more lighthearted, quick fire questions.
Sure.
The first thing that comes to your mind, okay?
Okay.
Okay, so, Bex, what is perhaps the most ridiculous thing you've had to do for a role?
Wow.
Is there?
I think the first thing that comes to mind would be to be out at sea for a full 4.5 months. And I have major motion sickness. So that drama was quite a torturous one for me because I play like a police coast guard.
Yes.
And with my motion sickness, basically every day was, the crew was betting, okay, what time is Rebecca going to puke?
So you definitely puked.
Yeah, definitely every single day for 4.5 months.
And you had to endure that.
Definitely,
wow.
Yeah.
Mm.
So that, I would say, would be the most
craziest
thing.
Yeah. Wow, okay. Thing. If you had to swap lives with any character that you have played for a day, who and why would it be?
Any character?
That you have played, yeah.
None. You know, because there's something different about real life and drama.
Mm.
In drama, there's always kind of like, so far for all the characters that I've played, very expected endings or happy endings. Or yeah, there are ups and downs, but I wouldn't want to swap lives with any of my characters.
Aww.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
You love the life that you're in and
I'm loving it right now. Yeah, I wouldn't say I loved it, but currently I'm loving my life.
Amazing. Yeah. I can't wait to dive into that. If your life were a drama, what is the title of your current season?
Wow.
Is that on Netflix?
This
right?
is a good
this
one.
Chapter. Which chapter? What's the title of this chapter?
I would steal the title from the Chinese variety show that I hosted recently, With Love Bex.
Mm.
Yeah, because I feel that love really conquers all. And in my current season of my life, I consciously try to do things with love. Yeah.
Mm, that's beautiful. And last one, okay? Who is your ultimate teenage celebrity crush?
Ooh.
Anyone at all?
Teenage celebrity crush. I have two.
Okay.
Thomas Ong and Fann Wong.
Wait, also because acted in a drama
Zai
together.
Jin Guang Lan.
Right.
Yes.
Yes.
So that was the show that I was like,
yeah. And what was it like then after that growing up and being in the same industry as them, especially, you know, with Fann too?
It's surreal.
Mm.
Surreal. The very first drama that I participated in was a Chinese drama. And I was a Califair in that Law series. And Thomas Ong was obviously the lead actor.
Wow.
So I think I was caught like just staring at him all the time because I didn't have any lines, right? So I could just stare at him. And it's very embarrassing to, you know, confess that now. But for Fann, you know, sometimes when I sit down for a meal with her, you know, or we talk about things, or if I meet with difficulty and she so generously shares her time and her wisdom with me, sometimes I go back home and I'm driving on the way home and I kind of pinch myself because It's quite, I would never expect my life to be like that.
Yeah.
You know, and also sometimes they say, you know, don't meet your idols, don't meet your heroes.
Yeah,
because they often disappoint you. But no, for Fan Wong, she's more amazing than what I would have imagined.
Oh, that's so nice to hear.
Yeah.
And since you talked about it, I want to also talk about your journey, right? Before the accolades, the spotlight and the headlines, bring us back to who you were. Who was Rebecca Lim before the world knew your name?
Not the world, lah.
Yes, the world.
Just some parts of Singapore.
No. And Asia.
Before that, I was just a very typical Singapore student. Growing up in a very traditional family, my parents were very, I would say they were very strict with me growing up, but also because I deserved it. I was the middle child. And so I guess naturally within me, there was this rebellious streak.
Yeah.
And it wasn't that rebellious, but just because my brother and my sister were so well behaved, they were head prefects, you know, band leaders, counselors, tennis captains. And I was just really a normal student, but in comparison, a problem child. So growing up, I was in kind of like that environment and just very kind of a fly on the wall. Yeah, not really noticed, but noticing everything.
Mm.
Yeah, and very low profile. Yeah, in school. I enjoyed sports, but yeah, just a very quiet student.
Mm.
Yeah.
And so, you know, was acting always part of the dream that you already had?
No.
Yeah.
Not at all.
Yeah.
Also because I grew up as a very chubby kid. Yeah, I was often
overweight.
I've
heard you say that.
Yeah. I was overweight since I was primary three all the way to I was secondary three. Yeah. And so being an actor has never crossed my mind.
Mm.
In fact, in school, I was involved in shot put. You know, and I was also in the cheerleading team, but not as the cheerleader. I was the one who had to crouch down and
the
get
base.
Yeah, I was the base. And I was actually even then very excited to be the base, to be part of the cheerleading squad. Because I kind of knew how I looked and I never had or dared to dream of being any one of them. So I think that I was a fat kid, and now, even as an adult, there's always that little bit of fat kid within me, that part where I'm like, I don't know if I can do it. I don't know whether it should be me or why is it me.
Right.
So yeah. So I think that contributes
because
to,
I think it's been so much a part of your psyche, your mental, and your mental, the voice inside.
Mm-mm-mm.
So what did your family make of your decision to pursue this path, especially in the beginning?
Strangely, my family was very supportive. And I thought my parents were going to object me going full-time into this industry after I graduated from university, because I studied accountancy in Singapore Management U. I majored in law.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So when I graduated, it was kind of at that first major crossroad of my life, right? Whether or not to pursue a full-time career in acting or to find an open, close, inverted commas, proper job.
Yes.
And so I consulted with my dad, and surprisingly, he was the one who said, you know, okay, what's the first role that MediaCorp is offering you after you graduate? And I said, it's a pupil in a law firm.
Mm.
So it's a Channel 5 drama, an English drama, and the title was called The Pupil, and I played the pupil. So I said, okay, fine. I mean, it's a law student. You're kind of using your degree to a certain
there's some
extent.
Relevance.
Yeah, there's some kind of relevance. You're not playing like a third party or anything negative. So, okay, go and play for 1 year and then...
Wait, how old were you when you had this conversation with your dad?
I just graduated from uni, so that was 2010.
Mm, mm.
I was much younger.
We all were.
I was 15 years younger, so about 23.
Mm.
Yeah.
So, and so he gave you that green light in that sense. And so that was the beginning of your
correct
journey.
Yeah.
And what happened after that? You know, when you started playing, beginning that journey of your career, did you fall in love with it immediately? Was it everything you had expected?
No. I did not fall in love with it immediately because it was something that I was not good at.
What? Acting?
Acting. Yeah, acting was something that I was not good at all. My Mandarin was horrendous. And because of me being so awful at what I do, more often than not, you get a lot of scolding and a lot of comments, you know, negative comments. And those weren't...
It's very harsh.
Yeah,
right?
It's very harsh. So, of course, there were negative comments, but there were also encouraging ones. Yeah. I wouldn't say positive. There weren't any positive ones, but there were encouraging ones. You know, or people who kind of somehow saw some potential in mm-hmm. me and mm-hmm. dared to give me an opportunity. Mm. Then things started to lead from one thing to another.
That's the thing mm-hmm. where even though, as you said, you know, in your words that perhaps you were not good at acting and your Mandarin wasn't as good.
Yeah.
But someone gave you the opportunity Correct. With that role. You know, it really reminded me back of, you know, Reese Witherspoon. Mm-hmm. And she gave this interview with Adam Grant where she also shared that, you know, in her famous movie, Walk the Line.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
She said every day she had imposter syndrome and self-doubts. And like she told herself she's not good enough for this role. Mm. She can't show up for it. She even begged her lawyer to tell the team that she's not going to take this on she verbally agreed already, but she wanted to rescind and things like that. And every day, even during filming, like she wouldn't want to show up and she felt horrible about herself. But at the end of the day, what got her through was that she just kept reminding herself that if someone gave me this role and opportunity, that means someone saw something in me. Yes. And that's what kept her going.
Yes.
And that reminded me of what you shared also. Mm. And similarly in your journey then, did you go through imposter syndrome? And what was it like for you?
Mm. All the time. All the time. Even till now, sometimes I have to remind myself to snap out of it.
You're real. You're a human being. Yeah. You're one of us.
Yeah, because, you know, this entertainment industry is such a superficial one. You know, everything is based on how you look, someone's impression of you. Mm. And I acknowledge that I'm not the most beautiful. I'm not like the slimmest, the tallest, the most talented. But just there are all these opportunities that were given to me when I didn't deserve them. You know, I'm not someone who would, you know, go and knock on doors. Mm. You know, I'm just a very quiet person. You know, and all these people kind of saw something in me which is very humbling. Because who are you to deserve all these opportunities when there are so many people out there who struggle so hard, work so hard for so many years, but they don't have the same amount of opportunities as you do? So sometimes when I put it in that perspective, I'm like, who am I to deserve all these good things that are happening to me? And so I doubt myself and I question, like, what else do I have to offer that this person doesn't, you know? And you feel guilty taking on these opportunities. But at the same time, you have to put in your best.
Yeah.
Because if you don't put in your best, you're not respecting the person who gave you these opportunities.
Yeah.
And I feel that's why I always give myself a lot of pressure. Mm. You know, and I always am quite a perfectionist because of that. Because I know that all these opportunities don't come easy. And so I really have to treasure each and everyone because I don't know when will be my last.
And make the most. Wow. Mm. So what happens when you spiral in negativity like you alluded to earlier?
Sometimes I just allow it to because I strangely feel that it's good for me, you know, to kind of don't think that I'm all that. Yeah, because if I fear that one day if I do live a life where I feel that, yeah, I deserve all these. These should be mine and not yours. It's a very dangerous position to be in because that's when, yeah, maybe mentally you're not spiraling downwards, but everything else in life will spiral downwards for you.
Yeah. You know, it really also reminds me of, there's this pastor that said, you know, like, I think the goal in life is not to shut out that voice, that imposter syndrome voice or voice of self-doubt. It's just to learn to lower the volume Correct. Of how it speaks
yes,
to you.
Yes, exactly. That's a great way of looking at it.
Yeah, because it keeps you sharp, it keeps you grounded, and it keeps you continuously, like, working hard, not be complacent, right?
Yes.
So what has helped you turn down that volume of negativity or self-doubt in your life?
It helps that I have a very close group of friends, you know, and awesome family support.
Yeah.
I mean, like people like you, you know, I treasure our friendship so much because you're someone that really knows how to uplift people. You know, when you feel like crap, you're like, ah, oh, Rachel. And then Rachel had the most wonderful things to say about you, you know, and you're like, oh, okay, I'm not that bad after all. Yeah. And also my family, you know, they always remind me that, you know, what can be given to you can also be taken away. So don't hold on to things too tightly.
Wow.
And I mean, you know, Sean Lee, our makeup artist. Yeah, my best friend. Mm. You know, he's someone that, I mean, he's also like me. We are both very perfectionist and we're very hard on ourselves. But it's good because we always push each other to be better.
Yeah.
And we are not like hard on ourselves and then we wallow in self-pity. We don't. We are hard on ourselves and we work on it and we hope to be better. So to find friends with that similar mindset, that helps as well.
Yeah, the environment you choose to surround yourself with. And what have you had to sacrifice in order to keep doing what you do at such a high standard?
Time with family.
Mm.
Yeah, time with family, I would say, is actually the only sacrifice. The rest, you know, time with friends, enjoying like lavish meals or being able to eat anything I want at any moment without caring about my figure. Those aren't, to me, sacrifices. Those are what I need to do.
Responsibilities.
Yeah, my responsibility is, it's just a fundamental requirement I give myself as an actor. So the only sacrifice would be time with family. Yeah,
it's really like what also Gurmit said, you know, because he said that the hours are really crazy and it can take you off a lot of, like, missing a lot of moments as well with the family. What was there a particular project or role that changed the trajectory of your career? Because you had quite a meteoric rise, you know, over the last two decades. Was there one particular project or role that helped you?
Oh yeah, most definitely. I mean, I started out acting part-time when I was in university. And that was great because my part-time student contract could pay for my university fees.
Wow.
So I was like, yay. But I was only getting very small roles in Channel 8 dramas, you know, Mandarin-speaking roles. And
was that the Thomas Ong one?
Yeah.
Not bad. You got to pay for your uni fees and then, you know, be with your...
Yeah, so I didn't think much about this whole acting career then as well because it was just a, oh, by the way, you know. But the pupil role did really create a huge difference because that was when I won my very first acting award at the Asian Television Awards.
Yes, that was with Janice Koh.
Yes, and yes. Well, speaking of which, I felt so terrible winning that award because Janice Koh is a brilliant actor and a wonderful human being. And we were both nominated in the same category for the same show. And so I had no hopes about winning the award because in my mind, she's going to win it, you know. But when, and I still remember we were all in the old Pan Pacific Hotel ballroom and I was holding my camera and trying to record this moment. I was like, oh, you know, Michelle Chia, oh, you know, Janice Koh, wow. And then when it got to me, I was just like, you know, just trying to enjoy the moment. And when they announced that I was the
winner,
I was shell-shocked. I could not move. I could not anything. All I could remember was Michelle Chia telling me, it's you, go.
Wow.
And then everything was just slow motion. And I remember I couldn't even walk up the stage because I was shaking so bad. Because I did not expect that at all. And I even told my parents, because my parents would pick me up from work, you know, send me to work and everything. So I told them, please pick me up at 10 p.m. sharp because I don't want to stay back and like socialize and talk. And so they had to wait for me for 2 hours because
of all the interviews.
All the interviews. And they were like, why? What took you so long? And my manager said, she won. And even my parents were like, what? And so we went home and we celebrated over instant mee and champagne. So that was unforgettable. And that really opened up many more doors for me.
You know, looking back on your career now, especially in the early days of your career, what is maybe one advice or warning that you wish someone had told you early in your career?
Never compare yourself with others.
Wow.
Yeah. I wish someone had told me that. Because I was constantly comparing myself to all my colleagues and feeling so lousy about myself. So I wish someone had told me, you are unique in your own way. This may or may not work out for you, but always remember that as long as you're trying your best, that's all that matters. Mm. There's so many things that are not within your control. My confidence was really just, I was really just putting it on, yeah, all the time.
Mm.
Yeah. It didn't come from inside. It kind of felt like I had to be acting all the time as long as I'm at work. You know, even when I attended events, the confidence was really put on. And then every time I got home, I'll be so exhausted because it just took so much of me to like turn it on, you know? Yeah.
At some point, did you feel really that it helps to fake it till you make it? Or or at which point do you realize that, okay, this is not sustainable and I need to start developing confidence from within?
Actually, only very recently.
Wow. Yeah. Only after almost 2 decades.
Yes, only very recently. I wish I thought more about my mental health before this. But no. Yeah, I thought of like, just because I have all these opportunities, I have to keep going. You know, I just have to do it. Like, even if there's nothing in me anymore, I just have to show up and be great. You know, or at least feel like I did my best. But only recently, and I would say motherhood really changed everything.
Mm.
Only when I was pregnant. And then suddenly, it was the first time I had to say no to a job. And through my almost 20 years, I've never said no to anything before. And my manager would know that I've never taken MC for more than, I think, like, more than 5 times in my entire 20 years.
Wow.
Yeah, because even if I was sick and even if I was not feeling well, even if I had a family emergency at home, I would just show up. Because it's the nature of the job. You're not the only one that's involved. You're 20 over people.
Right.
You know?
The show has to go on. So you have to show up.
Yeah, it has to go on. So it was only when I was pregnant and I had to say no, and suddenly I felt like, is this whole motherhood thing going to take away everything that I've worked so hard for?
Yeah.
And suddenly I'm left at home by myself because my husband is at work. And then thinking, looking through my Instagram, I'm like, who am I? I don't know. Who am I? I'm an actress, yes. I attend events. Yeah, I've won awards. Mm-hmm. But who is Rebecca without all these? I don't know. So that was my first wake-up call. Like, okay, I need to really sit down and dive deeper into who I am. Before that, I wish I was like you, Rachel. You know, I would think deep, you know, and think, oh, what does this mean to me? What is not? But I've never. I really just go all the way. And I've never had the time to really sit down and, you know, digest and think about things.
But I'm so glad that life gave you this opportunity to be able to do that. And you really also took it in your stride.
Yes.
Because it's never too late, Bex.
Yeah, it is never too late. And I'm glad that it's now. Maybe it is the right time because I have, hopefully, the maturity, you know,
yes,
to deal with who I am, the ugly parts of me, the strengths, the weaknesses, and to be honest and embrace every single part of me.
Mm.
Yeah.
How has that inward journey been like for yourself? Like, it's not easy. Mm-mm. And it can be uncomfortable to confront these parts of ourselves that we tend to either hide away or bury or, you know, don't want to address it. How has that journey been for you?
It has been very necessary. It has been, I would say, beneficial in more ways than I thought. Initially, when I went about trying to really find out, okay, who am I, you know? I was actually a bit scared because I thought to myself, if one day I were to lose my job, I were to lose this part of me that I've been working so hard for, would my husband still love me?
Mm.
Would my mom still love me? Would my friends still want to hang out with me? You know, so all these are questions that were very confrontational.
Yeah.
And I'm not a confrontational person. So to be able to have to be confrontational with myself was very challenging. And I constantly had to seek a lot of validation from my poor husband, Matthew. Because a lot of times I would ask him, if I'm not beautiful anymore, will you still love me? If I'm not an actor anymore, will you still love me? He's like, yes, of course, you know.
Yeah,
so, a lot of soul searching and it's been great.
Yeah.
Mm.
What have you discovered about yourself that you are really pleasantly surprised and proud of?
Previously, up to I got pregnant, I would pride myself in the role as an actor and also a role as a caregiver. Caregiver for my dad because he had a terrible stroke when he was 60. And he was, he was bedridden for 8+ years till he passed. So I guess that also contributes to why I didn't really have the time and the luxury, so to speak, to evaluate my life decisions and where I was heading towards or what certain milestones in my life meant. But after he passed, and also at the same time when I realized I was pregnant, suddenly I had a lot of time to do so. I still pride myself in being not a great actor, but a hardworking one.
You are a great actress.
But also primarily a good daughter, a sister, wife, and hopefully a good mom.
Thanks for sharing that, Bex. And, you know, you have also, in your journey, weathered seasons of like intense public scrutiny, like you mentioned earlier, not just in your life, but also in different aspects of your life, like in relationships, romantic and non-romantic as well. What has that taught you and how has that journey been like?
I am very thankful that I'm in a very good situation right now. So whenever I look back at all these past relationships, friendships, you know, I can be at a stage in my life where I am grateful that things did not work out the way I wanted them to. Yeah, in some way, as my mom would always say, you know, God is protecting me somehow.
Yeah. You may not feel it or know it there and then.
Correct. And because of all these things that have happened throughout my career, it has also taught me what I really want in a relationship, what is a big no-no and what I would treasure a lot more. And also it really proves and shows you right in your face who your true friends are. You know, because these situations where you are put under public scrutiny, there are people who may use it to their favor, or there are people who are seemingly concerned but are actually just very, we would say, kepo.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So you can really know who are the genuine ones and who are not. So I'm also very thankful for the seemingly bad seasons in my life that have really helped me to cut down my circle of friends, which I feel was a necessary thing to do. And yeah, it has really helped me to grow in some way as a person, made me a lot stronger than I used to be.
You know, because Bex, I always wonder, like, you have been loved, so admired, but also rumored about, speculated on. How do you protect your peace? Especially when people talk about you, like they know your story or they know fully what's going on. How do you protect your peace?
Wow, there are many times when things are being said and you really feel the urge to say something back. Or you really feel the urge to clarify that falsehood about you or some kind of misunderstanding or false reporting.
Yeah.
And there's this urge within you to say something because it's not right, you know, or you don't know the full story,
exactly.
You know. But I've always been a quiet person. Mm. And I think that benefited me in more ways than I thought.
Mm.
So maybe in that moment, I feel the urge too, but I'm just so scared to say anything. I don't have the courage to speak out, to speak my truth. But looking back, I feel my silence helped me and protected me, protected my peace, because who are the people who really matter? My family, my very close friends, myself. And as long as we are the ones who know the truth, that's all that matters.
Yeah.
And I always say, you know, time will tell. Mm. And I will let time tell.
It must take a lot of patience, endurance, because
discipline.
And I can imagine, well, there are times where you must have cried yourself to sleep because you just feel like you want to tell your side of the story, or you just want to, like you say, clarify something that was misunderstood.
Many times. And many times when you are actually perhaps in a not a great position, but other people victimize themselves. Yeah, when you are the true victim.
Yeah.
And then you're like, wait a minute, something's not right. Let me say something on Instagram. But you hold back. Because you're like, where's this going to lead to? You are just entertaining everyone's insatiable appetite for gossip.
Mei wan mei liao, right?
Yeah, really mei wan mei liao. So, and do I want to start, you know, another round of gossip? Do I want to start another round of useless chatter? And put my family at more stress than we already are because of my dad's situation. Mm. I think my dad was also a huge part of me that was that held me back, because there was so much trauma at home, so much emotional ups and downs with my dad in and out of the hospital, with him having a stroke, you know. And you always see in TV shows or in movies, you know, your loved one having a stroke or you know, falling ill, and you never think that something like that will happen to your family until it does. And then it becomes such a reality that you cannot shy away from because it's so in your face. And so I guess that was actually a huge part of why I actively choose to stay out of
the drama,
because there was already enough drama at home. I don't need any more in my life. Yeah.
What was the biggest lesson you think you've learned through all of this? Like you said, you were embroiled in so many things.
Biggest lesson. I would say a clear conscience is priceless.
Wow.
Yeah. It's nice to be able to hold your head high despite everything that's being said about you.
Yeah. And, you know, if I can also go back to a little bit on friendships, right? Because I think a lot of us in our adulthood, we go through something that is a little bit awkward, you know, where we, and also confusing, where we perhaps grow in different directions from people or friendships we thought would be in our lives forever. And yet we were never taught to grieve them or never taught how to approach situations like this. Have you ever been in any situation or have had friendships where you're just not aligned anymore and you've had to go your separate ways? How did you navigate all of this?
Several times, actually. And I never really felt the need to address them because I've always felt that at different seasons in your life, you have different friends. And it's great if you have friends that last forever.
Yeah.
But it's okay if you don't. And I have two very good friends that I've known from primary one, from seven. So we're each other's like bridesmaids. So it's just the three of us, myself, Cheryl and Michelle. So the three of us are just, we've been friends for the longest time. And I just feel that if friends or your then friends have showed you who they are, especially in times when you are doing well, they don't celebrate you. Let's not say all the negative stuff, but they don't celebrate you. I feel that that's not a genuine friendship that I would like to keep. And so just let it go. Yeah.
Mm. And when you mean they don't celebrate you, as in they're not happy for you when you achieve something or have a milestone.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. And I think that's the best way and the quickest way to see who your true friends are, you know. Because it's very strange that if you post a milestone or something celebratory online, so many strangers or fans congratulate you. But why is your friend not even... And I may sound very petty, but why is my friend not even liking my photo? You know? It's small things like that. Yeah. Wait a minute, you know? Did he or she not see? Or... Yeah. So if strangers can do that for you and your friends don't, are they your true friends? I don't know. Those are my signs, but everyone has different threshold of what a true friendship should be. Yeah, and sometimes less is more.
It's true.
Sometimes less is more.
Also, you know, Bex, I think having also heard about your journey, there's really a lot of like ups and downs that you've been through, especially in the last two decades. And I think for a lot of us, what we see on the outside is you always smiling, looking so glamorous, looking so good and happy. But what was perhaps one of the lowest seasons or lowest points in your life that no one or few people really knew about?
Takes me back to the time when my dad was just had a stroke. And I kind of hate to keep bringing this up because I always want to remember him in the best way possible. But I mean, he passed away 2 years ago. But that was really a huge part of me that was gone. Sorry.
It's okay.
So I remembered I had to film a comedy. It's called The Lead. Mm. It's the Chinese title is Di Zu Zhe, and we were filming in a fish farm. And the scene was me with my three other good friends in the show. We were supposed to like talk about our dreams and like, yes, you know, one day I'm going to be the best actress in the world. And I announced it, you know, in a very over-the-top manner. Like, oh, 总有一天我一定会是第一组车. And right before the camera rolled, I received a message from my brother. I remember very clearly that is no good. That's all it said. And it was like a tear dropped from my eye. And then I heard cameras rolling. Action. I'd keep my phone. That was the hardest thing I had to say. Yeah. And it was very ironic because here I am acting in a role where I want to be the best actress, but my dad was fighting for his life.
Yeah. And that was the beginning of your dad's diagnosis.
Yeah.
What did your dad represent in your life, Bex?
Such a wonderful question. What did my dad represent in my life? Courage. He was just the pillar of the family.
Since you were young?
Since I was young.
I remember you shared with me some of the little things he did with you as a family that also built the culture, and that's why, you know, your family that loves to share food, like slice up little things.
I mean, my dad didn't have much growing up, but he is the most generous person you will ever meet. Generous with the little that we had, but also generous with his time. Mm. Yeah, I'm so sorry.
Don't be sorry, Bex.
Yeah. Mm. Mm. And he's just someone that I really look up to. Mm. He's haven't had the best of health since I was in primary school, but he's always, through the pain and through his suffering, always found ways to make his children laugh.
Yeah. Even
when he before was... his before a major operation, he would crack a joke.
What a man.
He would pack his luggage for his hospital stay. Half would be his clothes. The other half would be tidbits for his children. Because we would come and visit him and then he'd be like, ta-da! All the tidbits for you guys. Yeah. So my dad was
such a man.
Yeah, very selfless. And one thing that he really taught me was it's very nice to be important, but more important to be nice. Yeah, and that has stuck with me since I was a little girl.
It's very nice to be important, but it's more important to be nice. Wow.
And always treat everyone the way you want to be treated. So those are, I can still hear his voice, you know, saying that, and my mom's voice as well. So oh, treat us the way you want to be treated, you know. So those are the values that I grew up with.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If he was still alive today, what do you think he would be most proud of you for, Bex?
Being a mother. Yeah, for sure. I'm sure he would have been very happy that my acting career kind of happened.
A great one.
I believe he would be most proud that I'm trying my best to be the best mother that I can be. Yeah. Yeah.
And it's so beautiful that when he passed, immediately after you and your sister found out that you
were pregnant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what a gift. It's almost
so
like...
we kind of believe or maybe it feels better for us this way, you know, that daddy probably could leave in peace because he knew that we were all in safe hands and that we are all in a position that he doesn't need to worry about us anymore. Yeah. And a lot of my uncles and my relatives will always say, you are the problem one. Your dad's the one that's always worried about you.
About you.
But so that was what happened when I got married. A lot of my relatives will say that, oh, you know, how worried your dad was. You know, blah, 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 blah. I'm like, yeah, I know, guys. Let's move on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I also want to talk about motherhood for you. Mm. 2 years ago, you became a mom.
Yes.
And what has motherhood changed for you?
Everything. Everything. I did not expect such a huge change in my life.
Firstly, was it planned for? Have you always wanted to be a mom? And was this planned?
No. I never had the urge to be a mom. I never had the desire to be a mother.
Mm.
I was very contented to be the fun tea in the family. You know, the just fun auntie. Yeah, just play. And then when they cry, like, bye. You know, I was very contented doing that. Mm. You know, spoiling them, giving them the lollipop, you know, ice cream, things that the parents will never allow them to eat. I love that role, you know. But for some reason, I guess I met the right person at the right time. Matthew and I will always talk about it. If we have met each other maybe 10 years ago, our relationship might not have worked out. We met each other when we both were ready at the perfect time for each other.
And what has Matthew brought into your life, you think?
Peace. Yeah.
Wow.
Peace and security that I've never had. The peace and the security that he gave me really made me like, maybe I can have a family with this man.
Wow. And so for the first time in your life, you actually felt that it's possible.
Yes. I think before that, I've had previous relationships, but I've never had the thought of, I want to have a child with this guy because this guy is maybe still a kid, you know? Yeah. So.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. So what was that like, you know? Is it everything that you had expected and more? And are you loving it?
Wow. I would say social media really gave me a false expectation of what motherhood is. It painted motherhood in such a picture-perfect way. Mm. And it's not.
Mm.
The pregnancy for me, thankfully, and thank God, was very smooth. I was enjoying every moment of being pregnant. because I could finally eat anything I wanted to.
Oh, right. Hey, were you still filming when you were pregnant?
No, I wasn't. I wasn't.
Oh, because so when you were pregnant, the moment you were pregnant,
I stopped. I had to say no. That was the first time I said
see.
No. And because not many people knew I was pregnant then, because I was still in my first trimester.
Mm.
But because of my age, my doctor was like, you better stop working. And I'm like, okay. And yeah, so that was the first
time. You could eat anything you could.
Yeah, because my doctor and the nurses said, eat for two. Then I'm like, wow, eat for two.
Sure.
That's great. Because all my life, I only can eat like for half or eat for three quarter. You know? And I really whacked. I really
oh my
eat for
God.
Two.
You took it to the fullest
yeah,
extent.
So
yeah.
Only towards the end, my doctor was like, you know, Rebecca, I don't need to eat for two, but I meant like an adult and a baby. Not two grown adults. So I enjoyed the entire pregnancy, but the delivery was the start of the... Oh, yeah, the nasty parts of motherhood that I was not prepared for. So painful. The recovery was so painful. And because I've always been very independent, I like to do things myself.
Yeah.
I don't like other people to do things for me. During the recovery, I couldn't even walk to the toilet properly.
Mm.
And I mean, the next day in the hospital, a nurse had to shower me. Oh my gosh, like I would not have imagined that.
You felt reduced to this state.
Yeah, and I'm like, oh dear, what did I get myself into? And
may I ask if this was a C-section?
No, it was a natural delivery.
Okay.
So even then, a natural delivery, everyone was like, oh, you're going to like start walking the next day. But I couldn't. So I was like, what is wrong with me?
Mm.
If everyone could get off the bed on day two and the supposed recovery was supposed to be so much faster than C-section, why can't I do it? So even from day two already, I was like, why am I lagging behind?
Mm.
Why am I not doing right? What happened wrong? You know?
Mm.
And I've never been like that before then. Before that, I'm like, okay, I'll just, tomorrow will be better. It's okay. Thank God for the day. Tomorrow will be better. But then that was when I started to have all these very, very negative thoughts. Mm. And even our first family photo as a family, I see a lot of content on social media.
Mm.
They look so beautiful on the hospital bed. And then they share, oh, welcome our baby to the world. I'm like, how?
Mm.
How do you look beautiful?
Mm.
Yeah, it was a shocking revelation for me. Yeah.
Mm.
And getting back to shape, you know, and you're feeling so terrible all the time. You're perspiring.
Yes.
Mm. You're panting all the time. Just out of the shower. You can finally shower, you know, after your confinement. Mm. And after the shower, you're perspiring again. You smell like milk. Smell like saliva.
Yeah.
Like, you don't feel sexy at all, you know?
Yes.
Like, you feel horrible. You feel like, no.
Everything,
don't touch me.
Nobody,
no one comes to visit me. Nobody, no, nothing.
Mm.
I was in that state for quite a long time.
A couple of months?
A couple of months.
Yeah.
Yeah. Only the very, very, very close friends, like one or two, would come. And even sometimes when family came, I was like, I'm sorry, y'all just stop on yourselves. I just need to sleep.
Yeah. I can imagine all that physical changes, your major changes you're going through, plus hormonal and, you know, and you also breastfed.
Yeah.
Yeah. How did you get through that after that, and did things improve from there on?
Oh, things definitely improved. And I think the only solution to all that is time.
Yeah.
I just took my time. And not that I consciously took my time, but it just needed time. I just needed time to get to a better space, get to a better mindset. Didn't happen overnight. And yeah, now I'm in a relatively healthier mental space.
Mm.
Yeah.
How long was your maternity leave?
Mm.
And how soon after did you have to go back to work?
The first job that I took up after giving birth was 2 months.
Two months
after giving birth. That was for the Star Awards. Yeah, and then my first hosting gig was 4 months after I gave birth for the second season of With Love Bex.
Mm.
Yeah, so that was tough. Yeah, the Star Awards was tough. The hosting gig was tough because you are constantly face to face with all your female colleagues who look absolutely wonderfully gorgeous. You know?
I mean, you just gave birth.
Yeah, but you forget that because you're in a situation where you have to look good, but you don't. Yeah, but you don't. And you cannot give yourself the excuse, oh, because I just gave birth, thinking everybody will understand. Because there are people who gave birth after 1 month and they look wonderful. You know, but it's been 2 months. Why do I still look like that? Why can't I find a dress to fit into? You know, so these were the struggles that I was having deep down. And also, I was still a relatively new breastfeeding mom. So after doing my hair and makeup, I had to rush up to level 9 of the TV station to pump and then come down, you know, smelling of milk and everything. So it was a bad experience for me. Mm. Yeah.
I remember you briefly sharing with me also that particular Star Awards.
Mm.
What was it like for you when you went through that? And you had to show up.
I had to. It wasn't like I had to. I mean, I guess I could take MC now on hindsight.
Your sixth MC yeah. in 20 years.
No, but it wasn't me to do something like that.
Yeah.
And it was, I mean, Star Awards is really a night where we celebrate the local entertainment industry. And I wanted to be there to, I mean, I wasn't nominated at anything, but to celebrate my colleagues, you know, the production crew and everyone who has been working so hard while I was just at home eating for two. So that was my mindset going to it. But yeah. I underestimated the stress that I would have to have to turn up and to look good for the event. And on hindsight, I feel silly, you know, being so pressured by that event. Because I really did just give birth 2 months ago and I shouldn't have had to be so harsh on myself.
Yes.
But you learn.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm. You know, Bex, I think a lot of us moms, we also go through mom guilt and constantly feel like, oh, are we doing enough? Are we good enough? You know, are we giving our child the best environment or anything, right? Mm. Do you also feel that mom guilt and constantly feeling like, oh no, am I missing moments, milestones? And how do you navigate all of that?
Initially, when I first started filming this long form English drama, so it took 9 months. We just wrapped. So,
congrats.
Thank you. So when I started it, my son was about maybe 7 months old. The first 2 weeks of filming, I would be crying actually every day during lunch, because during lunchtime I would be pumping in the room by myself and having lunch by myself. And it's not because I was alone that I was crying. It was more of because I didn't feel 100% at work.
Right.
I don't know whether you experienced the brain fog after giving birth.
Yes, for sure.
Yeah, the brain fog. I could not memorize my lines as well as I did. And physically, you don't look 100%. Mm. So physically and mentally, you're not 100% at work. And then while I'm at work, I don't feel 100% of a mother because I'm leaving my son at home. So I'm not here, not there. I felt terrible.
Mm.
Yeah, so I felt guilty and inadequate as an actor and as a mother then. But it took a few months for me to slowly get back into the swing of things. And I really had to consciously make an effort to remind myself to be 100% present wherever I am. I think that's what motherhood has taught me.
I love
to
that.
Be 100% present. So when I'm at work, I'm 100%.
Mm.
I don't think about my kid. I'm not one of those moms that look at the CCTV or anything. I've never actually looked at my CCTV because I just want to focus at my work.
Yeah.
And then when I'm at home, I leave my phone away.
Mm.
Sometimes my manager is calling me so many times. I'm like, I'm so sorry because my phone wasn't with me because I'm spending time with my son. Mm. And it has helped me so much because being at work and being 100% there, I'm recharging and refueling myself.
Yes.
so that when I go home, I can be 100% with my son. Yeah, if I'm neither here or there, I will forever be a 50% mother, 50% actor.
Mm.
And that has helped me find my new equilibrium in my life as a mom. Yeah,
I love that. Because it's really also about being fully present wherever you're at.
It's just like you. Mm. You have so many hats to wear. Mm. But every time I see you, you're very present.
Mm.
Yeah, and that's something that I'm still working at, and I'll have to learn from you.
No,
yeah.
We all are. And thank you for sharing, Bex. And because I think it's also so a real struggle, and to hear it from you, and to also for us to know that, okay, you know, Bex also, you do have to find a way to have to navigate that. And I love how you phrase it, like finding your new equilibrium and just embracing this new season that we're in with the roles that we play as well.
Yeah. And before being a mom, you know, you always have this mindset or this concept that time waits for no one. But you're like, yeah, I know, time flies. You know, the older we get, the faster time flies. But nothing hits you more in the face when you see a baby growing up and looking so different every few days.
Yes.
And then you're really like, oh, time really flies.
And new milestones before you know it. Yeah.
Yeah.
How has your definition of success or fulfillment or happiness in life changed and evolved?
So success to me now, not to belittle all the awards that I've won before,
yeah,
but I'm restarting already. So those were great. They served me well for before I was a mother. But now I thank you very much for my past, but now I want to work towards new successes.
Yes.
And new milestones to celebrate. My new achievements, my new challenges that I am to overcome, I'm excited for those moments instead of being terrified about them. Because just something in me has changed.
Yes.
Yeah,
and do you think that came with motherhood?
I think yes. Yeah, because before that, like I told you, I don't think about things.
Yeah.
You know, because everything's me. You know, I don't have to think about someone else.
It's true.
So motherhood has really made me a lot less selfish. And I've realized that about mothers around me. They're so selfless.
Mm.
Not only towards their child, but to the people around them.
Mm.
Like after I became pregnant, I have a new group of mother friends. They have been so generous in sharing, you know, tips.
Yes.
What to buy, what not to buy.
Yes.
And it's just something within us that just wants the people around us to be better.
Yeah.
And at the same time, we want to be better for the people that we love.
Mm.
Yeah.
And motherhood really expanded your world
and
everything in it.
Yeah.
Do you think you will try for a second?
If you asked me 1 year ago, I'll say, no, are you crazy? Are you out of your mind? But now I'm like, maybe we'll see. We'll see.
One thing I wanted to touch on was also, like, just now you shared with us the pressure that you face during your pregnancy and postpartum.
Mm.
And because in your industry, especially, you are judged for how you look.
Mm.
How has your definition of beauty evolved, and does it still affect you so much today?
Mm. My definition of beauty when I was first starting out in the industry was just to be as slim as possible and to look like everyone else.
Mm.
Yeah, I wanted to just look like everyone else.
Yeah.
And I would scrutinize myself in the mirror and be like, my one eye is bigger than the other.
Mm.
You know, my nose is not as high as the others around me. And there was a lot of unnecessary self-critique. But as the years went by, and like I said, and again, because I've surrounded myself with good people, they've really reminded me to embrace who I am and to age gracefully, you know, in a situation or in an environment where there's so much emphasis on how you look.
Yes.
The most important thing is to age gracefully.
Mm.
Yeah. And they always, you know, your heart reflects your face.
Yeah.
And as cliche as it sounds, if you have good thoughts, Yeah, how bad can you look?
Through. Yeah. Yeah, and I feel like you are the epitome of that to me.
I try my best to age gracefully, and it's very pressurizing, I would say.
And it's also very tempting.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yes. Many times I thought of, you know, taking a shortcut and, you know, looking better immediately because you're so
accessible and just tempted
to look better. And not only because of that, but because of what people say about you. You know, people say, maybe you should do this to your face. Maybe you should this. Maybe you should change your name. Maybe you should remove the mole on your face. Blah, blah, blah. So many things are being said about you all the time. And even sometimes when you look your best with makeup and hair, after 3 hours on the glam chair, you go for an event, people are like, yo, you look so tired. I'm like,
oh, no.
Are you kidding me? I thought I looked beautiful and now you say I look tired. And then your self-esteem is like,
oh no.
Yeah, so it eats into you. And I'd say that sense of insecurity, I believe, will never go away because it's just been there and you're constantly exposed. But what's important is how you snap out of it and how you remind yourself that, you know, you are enough.
Yeah.
You don't need to look like someone else. But if you want to do anything at all to your face, if it makes you feel better, why not?
Mm.
You know, but don't, I never ever criticize how other people look because I've always been criticized for how I look since I was a kid. And I know how that feels. So I never ever do that.
Mm.
Yeah.
Having gone through everything that you've gone through also, you know, the ups and downs of the journey, what would you say to younger Bex when she was just starting out on this journey, bright-eyed, innocent, and excited for the road ahead, and knowing everything that you know?
I would say don't be distracted in wanting to be that shooting star in the sky. They may shine the brightest, but don't underestimate the star that has always been there, shining sometimes not so brightly, sometimes very brightly, sometimes hidden by the clouds, more often than not overshadowed by the shooting star. But be that star that's always lighting up the sky. Yeah.
Hmm.
It's easy to be a shooting star in this day and age now. Yeah. Just there. Wow, bright. But the longevity, I feel that's what matters.
That's so beautiful. And in this season of your life, Bex, what are some non-negotiable boundaries that you have learned to draw?
I've learned to treasure my peace a lot more. So if something comes along and it's disrupting that, I can very easily 1 year in, 1 year out, you know?
Yes.
Yeah, I'll be like, thank you, but bye-bye, you know? And that may rub some people the wrong way because they've been so used to the everything yes backs.
Yeah.
But I'm learning to draw boundaries and to say no.
Yeah.
It's difficult, but I'm learning to say no. And I'm learning only when I'm close to 40, you know. So I admire all the young people who have the courage and the bravery to draw boundaries when they're young. I wish I was able to do that, but I believe I had to go through everything.
Yeah.
And it's just my character, you know. So, but never too late.
Never too late. Bex, what do you think, you know, as we also wrap up, what do you think has been the hardest lesson that life has taught you or life has been trying to teach you in this journey?
The hardest lesson. Listen to your instincts. Yeah. Listen to your instincts. The many times where I've been in a position where everyone's telling you, no. Please don't. For your own good, don't. But there's this stubbornness within me that I'm like, the more you say no, the more I'm going to prove to you I can. But also something deep inside that gut's telling me, you know what? They're right. But it's just because I want to prove people wrong that I go ahead. And most of the time it ends badly, or I fall into a terrible position. So yeah, listen to your gut. And listen to your parents. They are much wiser than we are.
Yes.
And my mom always say, I told you. Always hate it when my mom tells me, I told you. Yeah.
I hope your son listens to this episode one day and also feels the same.
Yeah, I'm going to play it to him every single day. Repeat.
Repeat. Listen to your parents.
It's 1.5, but I'm just going to play it.
That part. But what are you looking forward to in this season of your life, this stage that you're in?
I'm excited about everything.
Yeah. I love, by the way, that Bex, that you're not jaded by life. You're not by anything.
That's even true. Maybe I should through, be.
Please don't. You have really gone through low points in your life. And yet, you are still hopeful, still positive.
I would say, of course, I have bad days. Yeah, I'm not like positive every single day.
Yeah.
I do have bad days. And that's human, you know. But I really am excited about everything. You know, small things make me excited now. I used to think that I need something big, like a big project or a big movie, you know, or a blockbuster drama to make me excited. But no, you know, small things make me excited. Like going to pick my son up, that excites me.
Yeah.
Bringing him to the beach, and I hate the beach, but I don't know why now the beach excites me. So small things excite me. Like even date night with my husband, or a stroll around the neighborhood, you know, excites me. Going for morning breakfast with my mom excites me. Meeting up my sister to have play date with my niece excites me. And actually, I realize everything that I mentioned is all about family.
Yeah,
so
that is very telling.
So I think,
what truly matters also at the end of the day. Is there something, a project coming up that we can all also look forward to? And you talked about maybe some of the 9-month filming that you had earlier.
So that English drama will be premiering January 2026. So that will be my first acting sort of a comeback after a break for 3 years. And then I'll be on the big screens next year.
Amazing.
So that's something else that I'm excited about.
Yes, that's really amazing. And lastly, Bex, you know, if you could have a message on the billboards of the biggest cities in the world, what would your message say and why?
This is such a good one. I would say just treasure the ones you love.
Thank you so much, Bex, for sharing a part of yourself with us and being so real, so relatable and so genuine. We really love being with you, watching you.
I love being with you, Rach. Like really, really, really. Yeah.
Thank you so much for also coming to share with us. And we're so excited for what's to come for you. It's going to be great. And so excited to also watch you evolve into the woman that you're becoming. That's so inspiring to all of us. So thank you, Bex.
And thank you for providing this safe space for me to do something like that. And you know I'm a fan of your podcast, right?
Oh.
I show you, right? I listen to all your podcasts. Yes. So,
thank you so much,
Bex.
Thank you for
that. Yeah.